Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz underscore radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Great to have you in on Wednesday. It's Hail Varsity Radio presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, the pride of Chicago, is Danny Burke, and we are loaded up today. Great news for Nebraska football fans and the commitment of Wandale Robinson. We'll get in touch with Greg Smith, recruiting insider for Hail Varsity, in about 10 minutes, get his take on how this all went down. We'll spend some time hitting recruiting, the Big Ten landscape, and the Bowls with Coach Jerry DiNardo. Big Ten Network, 15 to 20 minutes away with Coach Brad Edwards next hour. Jacob Padilla, HailVarsity.com basketball guru, will join us at 525. You can jump in, 466-3776, 466-3776, 800-825-5865. Numbers to get in. Give us a follow on Twitter, at Hail Varsity, at Schmidt underscore radio, at Danny Burke 5, and can email Chris at HailVarsity.com. Well, let's talk Wandale Robinson. Let's talk about what he is, where he's from, and how this went down. Nebraska did not waver. Nebraska did not quit. Nebraska did not get scared off. Nebraskan Coach Ryan Held read this perfectly, read this beautifully, and it is a major get for Nebraska. Wandale Robinson, a four-star athlete. Wandale Robinson is the guy that you compare to Rondale Moore. Wandale Robinson is a guy that you think about best-case scenario, on-field production, on-field electricity, Tariq Hill, right? I mean, that's kind of the visions that go through my mind looking at Robinson's highlights in Frankfort, Kentucky. I mean, the kid ran out of the Wildcat. The kid ran in the slot. The kid split out deep. The kid was a punt returner. You name it, he did it. And my question is, okay, can this wow factor, big play, explosiveness, can it translate even a smidgen, and I think yes is the answer, to the Big Ten, to the college level? Because I swear to you, and it's a highlight tape, man. It's like a mixtape you made back in the late 90s, some of us, or it's like your workout playlist. You love it all. So the highlight tape is, yeah, of course the kid's going to score every time he touches the ball. But he makes great catches in traffic. I didn't see a play that honestly was under 25 yards. And he is, say it with me, like a glove. Ace Ventura fans, with this offense. Here's the thing. And Robinson put out on Twitter that no interviews, please. Respect my decision, please. But he's a kid that is very sincere. I'm going to read you through his statement on Twitter. Greg Smith's coming up in 5 minutes. Hail Varsity recruiting analyst. Throughout this whole recruiting process, I've always been told, do what's best for you. And that's how you have to live your life. You have to live your life for you and nobody else. Just follow your heart. Those words of advice got away from me as my verbal commitment date neared. I got overwhelmed by the pressure from outside influences, the pressure of staying home, and the pressure of trying to please everyone. Most people don't realize the stress that goes on with recruiting, especially when it's from your home state and everyone wants you to go there. Staying home is something I would have loved to do, but unfortunately, my heart just isn't there. I will be decommitting from the University of Kentucky. Coach Stoops, Coach Morrow, Coach Grand, Coach Smith, the University of Kentucky, the entire UK fan base, I can't thank you enough for the support that you've given me throughout the whole process. I regret that things happened the way they did. It was never my intention to hurt or mislead anyone or play any sort of, quoting here, game. I am grateful for the opportunities that UK offered me and have the utmost respect for the entire program and the university. So how did Nebraska do this? Well, first and foremost, they were tuned in. Their radar was up. Okay, Robinson, what do you want to do? Do you really want to go to Kentucky? Cue up the YouTube from one of their seniors bitching about their fan base not showing up for senior day. Is Kentucky a flash in the pan, or is it a sign of things to come? Is Kentucky going to go 9-3 ever again? Maybe. Are they going to build up to win the SEC East ever? No. They're not taking Georgia down. They're not going to beat Tennessee. Kentucky would be best served to strive for 7-5 every year. And they're a basketball school. So you're always going to be second fiddle. Nebraska beat out the home state school. And when I see this term, outside influence, the guy that Robinson, I think, was listening to and then stopped listening to was his trainer. Okay? He's got a guy that he's been working out with, a guy that's, I don't know what his intentions are. I know that there are very real consequences if you don't deliver in-state school to in-state kid to in-state school. And if he's a trainer, what's his business look like tomorrow? If our kid's going to keep going to him? I hope so, if he's a good trainer. Or is this guy trying to parlay something for him with Kentucky? I don't know. I'm asking the question. I'm not accusing. I'm saying there are worse stories to be told when it comes to handlers and influencers. Of course, this guy wanted him to go to Kentucky because he would have had it made with prospects as a pipeline guy. And if I'm Robinson, is Kentucky sexy offensively? Terry Wilson's a good quarterback. Is Terry Wilson a good thrower? He had Adrian Martinez. You don't know what's going to be at quarterback with Purdue. As awesome as Brohm and that offense and Purdue's going to be that he stuck around. And then there's Ohio State. Ohio State made a transition starting yesterday. Ryan Day is a smart football coach and a good play caller. Haskins is going to be a top three pick. Tate Martell's a dual threat run first guy. Easy math to do. Very easy math to do. Who's going to get me the football? Who's got the best guy with the best arm? Oh, and by the way, who's the realist with me? It's Nebraska and Coach Ryan Held. Period. Easy call to sit here and say that. But the work, the legwork by Ryan Held, incredible. The latter part of Wandale Robinson's statement on Twitter, with that being said, I'm following my heart and announcing that I'll be committing to the University of Nebraska. Thank you, Coach Frost, Coach Held, Coach Walters. This is impressive to rip a kid out of SEC country, to rip a kid out of Kentucky. The kid got to see pregame for Akron before the reenactment of the hurricane scene in Forrest Gump happened. And we'll talk to Greg Smith now, insider with HaleVarsity.com and magazine recruiting analyst at Greg Smith HV. Greg, how about this? I knew you felt good that things may turn. They did turn. Wandale Robinson is in. Your reaction?
It's huge news for Nebraska. It's a big deal, like I said, for many reasons. Number one being that Wandale is a fantastic prospect. He continues to rise up everyone's kind of ratings as ratings are being revised around the country. I think Rivals now has him as like the 97 or 98th ranked player in the country. He'll be participating in the U.S. Army All-American Bowl. It'll be his last high school game before he heads to Nebraska. Nebraska in January, but he's a big-time prospect. Like, there's no minimizing that. He's a great fit for Nebraska's offense and what Scott Frost and Troy Walters are looking to do. And anytime you beat out the home state school, like, you've done something really right. As he kind of alluded to in his message on Twitter when he announced the decision, it's really difficult to turn down your home state school given all the pressure, especially when you're an athlete the caliber that Robinson is.
What's Don Miller saying right now? His high school coach, he had a statement, didn't he?
Yeah, he did, and he was really level-headed about it and talked about, you know, how difficult the decision was and how he sat down with Wandale and told him that he needs to make the best decision for him. And I think that's a great thing to hear, regardless if the decision ended up coming down for in Nebraska's favor. I think you always like to hear that kids have multiple people in their lives that are giving them positive messages that are saying, hey, we just want you to do what's best for you, not necessarily what's going to make everyone else happy, your classmates and all of that, then be the hometown hero and all of that. Do what makes you happy, and you'll be better off in the long run.
Right on. And in Robinson's statement, outside influences, the guy I think Nebraska had to, I don't want to say sever in this, but Robinson's got kind of a personal trainer, correct?
Yes, yeah, and it gets a little confusing because his dad is also a personal trainer, so people continue to think that it's the dad that
but
we're talking about here.
It's not.
There's another trainer out of Louisville, I believe, that you kind of have to navigate with, and this, mm-hmm. this happens a lot. Like,
right,
this comes
right,
up
right.
all the time. I think was it Switzer that said once that everybody's got an uncle? I think now
he said that to us, yes.
Yeah, everybody now has a trainer. There's also the trainer to go along with the uncle, so it's just another landmine to have to navigate. But at the end of the day, you do have to kind of either win those folks over or convince the prospect to go away from the advice that they're steered, that person is steering you towards if there's a little bit of a disagreement there. I think it's also important for Coach Held, Coach Walters, and Coach Frost to win over the family mm-hmm. in this one, too, because you got to imagine if you think Wandale is feeling pressure, and he was, to stay home, you got to think of his family has to deal with that in their everyday lives as well. So you've got to be able to have a strong relationship with them if you're the Nebraska staff, too.
Well, Robinson said that his recruitment is closed. Do you believe that?
I do believe that, and one of the big reasons is he did not actually say that when he committed to Kentucky before. Like, if you kind of go back and look at the stuff that he said about that, and I know that it came up, and I believe we talked about it on the show, that he said to some Kentucky TV station that, you know, he was good and that he'd sign later on. But when he made that announcement, he didn't say that things were shut down. It kind of came out, I found out that only Nebraska was the only school that continued to recruit him throughout this process after he committed to Kentucky. So that relationship was still strong the entire time, and he said that Nebraska had still been on his mind. But I do believe that things are shut down, and we'll see him in Lincoln come January.
Greg, got 2 minutes here. The fine line of punting on a prospect and staying in it and winning that, I mean, it is razor thin. And you got to know when to move on and when to keep on keeping on. And Coach Hale did just an amazing job with that read on Robinson.
Yeah, that cannot be overlooked, because that is something, if you're just wasting your time, that's valuable time that you could have been spending with another prospect if Robinson had decided to stick with Kentucky or did not reciprocate that interest. So, yeah, that's a big thing, and it's kind of like the old sales forecasting, right? You got to know what you can actually bring in, and Nebraska felt really good about what they could do. Plus, I think we can now safely say that Ryan Held is an ace recruiter, right? Like, mm-hmm. I think off the top of my head, he maybe has 5 or 6 four-star commitments since he came into the fold, because he also recruits junior college. They also have him help with other positions as well. So Ryan Held might be the first person in line for a raise around here.
Absolutely. Greg Smith, HaleVarsity.com and magazine at Greg Smith HV is where you follow him on Twitter. Great info and insight in reaction to the Wandale Robinson. And Robinson does what at Nebraska? I know you said he's enrolling early. Forecast, what's a good first year for him? Or does he need to get bigger, stronger, faster? I don't think they'll redshirt him, but who knows, right?
No, he's coming into play. I think you feel like a lot like Maurice Washington was coming into play.
Sure.
Even though Maurice was underweight throughout the season. Scott Frost even said that. I don't think that Wandale is underweight. He's really well put together. Is very athletic and explosive. He'll be able to play right away. So if he can contribute in his first year, he does not have to light the world on fire. I know the Rondale Moore comparisons are out there, and I hesitate to go there because it would be a lot to have him produce like that his freshman year. If he can approach that, Nebraska's got something really special here, but they are going to probably use him a lot the same way that Jeff Brohm uses Rondale Moore at Purdue.
All right, who's next? 60 seconds. Give me who's next for Nebraska, and give me a second choice. Give me your first, your second, your third. Give me three names.
You put me on the spot there. I'll go Tony Wallace, the defensive back that was in town last weekend from junior college. For the first choice, Amari Barno, the outside linebacker from junior college, will be my second choice. And then there's another wide receiver coming in this weekend, Winston Wright Jr. I'll say him as the third choice, provided that, you know, he doesn't get scared off by Wandale coming in, but he shouldn't because they play two different positions.
Greg Smith, follow him at Greg Smith HV. Read him, HailVarsity.com. Greg, I'm sure I'll bother you again Friday, but awesome stuff. Great work with the info on Wandale Robinson flipping and committing to Nebraska. Thanks for the time, man.
Hey, thanks as always, man. And look out for some more info on that homegrown event that Nebraska has going on tonight.
And now,
back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back with you, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. We say hi to the coach, Jerry DiNardo, Big Ten Network with us, at Jerry DiNardo on Twitter. Coach, an interesting last week. And last 24 hours with the news of Urban Meyer, let's start there. Were you surprised?
You know, I wasn't surprised. I was surprised at the timing. I actually thought, you know, it could have come a little bit earlier, or I thought it could have come after the Rose Bowl, but I thought there was a good chance this was his last year. So timing surprise, not the event.
And moving forward with this, I mean, what are your impressions of Ryan Day and thoughts on Ohio State keeping a stranglehold on the Big Ten?
Well, you know, and certainly is, you know, qualified. You know, I think the issue is rookie head coach learning how to be a head coach at a place like Ohio State. I always think that's difficult. You know, I was at Indiana when Mike Davis took over for Bob Knight and watched him try to do that. You look at Bob Davey taking over for Lou Holtz in South Bend. But then you look at Lincoln Riley taking over for Coach Stoops, and, you know, and that's worked. So, you know, Chris, it's tough the first time you're a head coach. I think it's exceptionally tough when you're in a situation like Ohio State. So we talk about Urban being one of the great coaches in college football history, and yet we turn around and say, you know, Ryan Day is ready for the job. So obviously I'm pulling for him, but this is going to be a challenge.
Jerry DiNardo's with us, Hail Varsity Radio, at Jerry DiNardo on Twitter. Coach, what needs to happen in the Big Ten? I mean, if you were to tweak some things, if you were king for a day, right? Let's just go there for a minute. And you had some suggestions that you could implement. How does the Big Ten next year avoid watching the college football playoff? They were right there. They just had a one-loss conference champ, but they're left out of the playoff again.
Well, you know, if I was king for a day, my wife would divorce me. But other than that, you know, Chris, I don't think there's any answer to that other than expanding the playoffs. And, you know, I've always been against expansion, but I went back and I looked at the first four years of the college football playoffs, and I looked at who they had ranked 1 through 6 in the last 4 years. And if you do that, every conference has been treated fairly. And I'm not saying that a conference champion should be automatically part of the playoffs. I just think that what we're asking this committee to do is too difficult for them to do. if you make it a little bit easier, meaning you go one through six or one through eight, then I think that you're going to give all the conferences a fair chance to be included. And here's why I've come to that conclusion. I'm okay with the first four that went in this year. Two of them are undefeated conference champions, and one, Oklahoma, is a one-loss conference champion, and Notre Dame is an independent that's undefeated. I'm okay. But when you put Georgia ahead of Ohio State, and the argument against Ohio State is the bad loss against Purdue, and yet Georgia has two losses, I have a problem with that. And I've lost faith in the committee because of that reason. Don't tell me that Ohio State had a bad loss, but Georgia had two good losses, because that's what you're telling me. And so I've said from this point on, I am for expansion. I worry about the college athletes playing too many games, but I think it can be organized where only one team might play too many games, and I think they would be happy to be ranked sixth and play for the national championship.
Coach Jared Innardo's with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Coach, Nebraska just got a big win today, a commitment. Wandale Robinson, four-star athlete out of Frankfort, Kentucky, had been committed to Kentucky. It's not fair to compare him to Rondale Moore, but that's the style of player he is. Okay, he's just really, really good. I wanted to get your take on this because the recruit that flipped to Nebraska had a lot of pressure he was facing from his home state to stay home. What was that like for you to keep a kid in state, and also that process of figuring out, yes, I can flip this kid and be right to flip him versus wasting time and not getting a kid?
Well, Chris, I've done it both ways. Obviously, I've gone into different states and tried to argue against staying home, and I've been in state arguing for staying home. Right. I just think it's just like guys not playing in the bowl games. You know, these have really become financial decisions. The adults in the room have turned college football into a money ball. And so if you can go in and visit with a prospect, whether you're trying to keep him home or whether you're trying to take him away from home, and convince him that this is best for his future, not only his college education, but his future, then, you know, I think this is fair. I think it's absolutely fine for people to go in, talk to guys that are committed, and give them a different presentation. I always relate this to academics for the parents that maybe don't have a athlete in the mix, just a student in the mix. If I've been admitted to school X and I was on the waiting list at Harvard, and then I get admitted to Harvard, most parents and most children are going to make that decision. So if I have committed to one school and I feel like the next school or another school that comes in that gives me a better chance to win a championship, a better chance to advance my career, I don't see anything wrong with changing the decision, and in this case, going to Nebraska.
What do you think of Nebraska's recruiting right now? And I know you follow recruiting. I'm not asking you to get specific with the class, but just an overall view. What's your impression right now of where Nebraska's at in the Big Ten and the momentum they have? And that's weird to say at 4-8, but it feels like there's momentum for this program for sure.
Well, I want to say last time I looked, which was Monday morning, they were fourth in the conference. So correct me if I'm wrong. First in the West, fourth in the conference. And I think Purdue was fifth in the conference and second in the division. I think Michigan State was next. I think that's probably as low as they should be. Sure. I mean, I don't see any reason why Nebraska can't be every year first in the West and challenge Ohio State, Penn State, and Michigan for the best class in the country. Coach Osborne did it. The rules that have changed recently only help Nebraska, because we can pay for the parents' invitation now. We can do it as a junior, so someone doesn't have to drive from California to Lincoln at their own expense. we now can pay for them to come, and not only can we pay for them to come, but we can pay for their parents. We can go to New Orleans and do the same thing, St. Louis, Detroit, wherever you want to do. So I have very high expectations of what Nebraska can do recruiting. I think they're just scratching the surface. I think it's only going to get better, and I believe it only should get better.
Jerry DiNardo's with us, Hail Varsity Radio, at Jerry DiNardo on Twitter. Coach, we'll keep you a couple more minutes. When you look at the playoff field, can anyone take down Bama or Clemson? And I know Oklahoma's on the doorstep to take on Bama, and I know a school you're proud of and went to, Notre Dame, has Clemson. Do you like this this Final Four?
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, I think it's reasonable that it is the final four, right? There's, like I say, there's two undefeated conference champions, sure. one loss conference, and they're in. You know, Chris, I think you know this as well as anybody. I live in a bubble. I study in depth 14 schools. I don't have time to watch really a lot of other football. I haven't seen Alabama play. I haven't seen Clemson play. I've seen a little bit of Notre Dame play. And so, you know, I don't really know. When you say, can anybody beat Alabama? Can anybody beat Clemson? I think the answer is clearly yes. You know, that's why there's upsets. That's why we play the game and all that. Is there a good likelihood that they can do it? You know, I really don't know. I'm going to spend a lot of my time studying Washington against Ohio State because I'm going to the Rose Bowl. Can it happen? Yeah. Will it happen? You know, there's probably people that know a lot more about it than I do.
That's very, very fair. Talk to me a little bit here about some of the Big Ten Bowl matchups. Is there another bowl matchup that you're excited about? I know you'll be at the Rose Bowl. You'll be enjoying sunshine on New Year's Day. You deserve it. But some of the other matchups, I mean, should this be a good postseason for the Big Ten?
Well, anytime your best team isn't in the college football playoffs, much like last year, you should do well in the bowl games, right? Because mm-hmm. the seeding helps you. In other words, you know, Ohio State goes to the best bowl and everybody gets bumped down one. If Ohio State would have gone to the playoffs, then Michigan would have gone to the Rose Bowl and everybody gets bumped down. So anytime you're not in the college football playoffs, you should do better. I want to say that the Big Ten was 7-1 last year. And, you know, is that something to be proud of? I guess it is. But I think the more important fact is we weren't in the college football playoffs, and that's more of a negative than the positive of 7-1. You ask me which bowl games? I would think that Michigan, after having 62 points scored on them, I would think that they would be excited about trying to redeem themselves against Florida. I look at Northwestern. You know, they're 8-5 right now, Chris. Mm. If they lose, they're going to be 8-6. I don't think that they're a team that looks like it only won two more games than they lost. So I'm really hoping that they win 9 so that the national opinion of them is a 9-win team instead of an 8-6-win team. But, you know, you have Minnesota that's got to get ready for the option with Georgia Tech. I think there's a storyline there. You have Wisconsin that I think it's been proven if you can't throw the ball nowadays in college football, you can't beat the best teams. Are they going to start evolving? You know, I used to call Wisconsin a pro formation team. Mm-hmm. Right, Chris, right now, the pro formation is the spread. Yeah. I mean, this is one of the few times in the history of the game that the college teams have influenced the pro teams, and now it's trickle up instead of trickle down.
I like that. Coach, we'll get caught up again as we get closer to some of the bowl games. Enjoy a little downtime if there is such thing for you. Thanks for your insight. Thanks for your input with us today.
Appreciate it, Chris. Thanks.
Take care. Coach Jerry DiNardo. You know what I think we did? I think we caught Uncle Jerry at his restaurant. I think he snuck out to do the interview. He's got a D'Angelo's is what it's called. In Bloomington. And sometime I'm going to get a Bob Knight story out of him. I just saw that 30 for 30 last night. It is Shoey time. Mike Shewhart going to join us. Brad Edwards on the way. Jacob Padilla loaded up. Hail Varsity continues.
And we're back.
Fellas, think we could listen to the radio?
On Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Yes! That's awesome!
Good to get caught up with Jerry DiNardo tomorrow on the show. The Pirate Mike Leach will be with us. I told you maybe a Pirate sighting today. The Pirate will be with us tomorrow. Our favorite, Mike Shewhart. Shuey is in. And it's a little chilly to be swinging it out at Wilderness Ridge, but it sounds like you guys got a good party going tonight.
Yeah, we do. We have our member and guest membership renewal tonight. So got like over 100 people signed up to show
awesome,
up.
Man.
So it'll be fun. We'll have a good time tonight.
That'll be tremendous. Shuey, you are all over recruiting. You love it.
I do.
Lived it. You follow it. And you came in and just you high-fived, said, how about Wandale?
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Not only from the athletic standpoint of what he is.
Skill player, right.
But what, you know, just reading some of his stuff, you know, it's the kid knew more of really what he wanted to do, and it didn't feel right what mm-hmm. he did, you know. So, and he stuck to his gut and said, you know, I gotta decommit and go to a place that feels more right mm-hmm. for me. So that doesn't happen all the time. It's because there's a lot of pressure on those kids and a lot of people in their ears.
That's where I want to go with this. You coached a long time in Division I, Shuey, and you see it. And you have to sift through it, but you have college basketball, you have college football, you have your other college sports, but you have, and these are good. My kid plays, I don't want to call it club, but he plays for a basketball team, but it's about development, camaraderie, his buddies. It's not cutthroat serious. I mean, they still play them, you know?
Sure.
So my question here is, with Wandale Robinson, I mean, I can't imagine, and maybe you can speak to seeing a kid go through that or having a conversation with a kid that, man, the home state's like begging me to stay.
Yeah.
And I'm letting an entire state, although it's a basketball school, down if I don't stay here.
There's so much pressure because, again, I mean, they're talking to him and telling him, and they're building him up like they do and like they should. I mean, it's like, man, you can be a hero. You can be a legend. You can do this.
You're that next step piece.
You're the guy. You're going to take this program to the next step and all that. And it's hard not to buy into a lot of that stuff. But sometimes you have to step back and look at what the reality of what it is because it's more than that. I mean, you are a student athlete. Mm-hmm. You know, we lose sight of that a lot is that it becomes athlete and then where's the student part of it,
sure.
You know, especially when you're building these kids up, trying to get them committed to where, you know, you want them to go. And it's like, you know, it's like, where are you going to fit in to be the best student athlete that you can be that allows you to be happy and comfortable getting an education? And also playing, you know, the game that you love to play. So too many times they get a lot of people in their ear that you lose sight of the other part of what it is, and they just get kind of overwhelmed with, oh, I'm going to be a superstar here. And then they walk in, and it doesn't quite turn out the same way that the picture was drawn for
sure.
them, you know. And then
they thought it was ink, it was pencil.
Very much so. Yeah. Invisible pencil half the time disappears.
That's just it. And you've got handlers, and that guy's or gal has to deliver to a home state school, or their business may suffer. But in the same sense, it's your job if you're one of the trainers or coaches to be straight with the kid. Where's he going to go thrive best? And we're just talking on field, but it's really more than that. It's where are you going to thrive best off the field academically for life beyond sports. And I think that's the thing that separates Coach Frost, Coach Held, Coach Walters from a lot of guys. I mean, they absolutely preach it, but they live it. I think they are so doggone sincere to the kids about just life, and they can connect with kids about.
And it's real. I mean, it's
being very real.
Yeah, it's a proven thing. I just saw today 36 academic all Big Ten football players, mm-hmm. 6 academic all Big Ten volleyball players. So it's like they don't just preach it; they prove it. They do it. I mean, that's proven right there. Mm-hmm. You can't take that away from what they're producing. They're saying it. They live it. They have the kids go through it, and they produce it. So it is a real thing, and it's an important thing. And it's like I said, that's a part of it that gets me a little frustrated at times. Is that sometimes you lose sight of that, and that's actually the most important part of it. Because, man, at any time you can have an injury, You can have anything happen to you that takes you away from what it is that you do, and then what? Are you happy with where you're at? You know, is a support system around? Will they still continue to back you?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've had a devastating injury and I can't play anymore. So it's like, are they just done?
Do you still care about me?
Exactly. Are you done with me? You know, you throw me out in the trash, and it's like, no. I mean, they preach that and they live that and they do that. You know, and that's what's so impressive about the University of Nebraska. I mean, they do care tremendously about their student athletes, and they stick with them and they stick behind them.
Mike Shuhart's with us, Hale Varsity Radio. Shuey is in studio. Brad Edwards coming up. We're talking some college football. Let's switch gears. And you're a huge Nebraska basketball fan. You thought about wearing the Richard Van Polgies throwback jersey today, but decided against it. Wow. Huge ball. You remember the Geest?
Man, that's a name out of the past.
Oh, he was my favorite when I was a kid.
It's like, wow.
And then I found out later on he would get kicked out of the Old Country Buffet because he'd fall asleep studying there.
Didn't know that.
yeah. Some inside intel from back in the day. But I got to ask you, how are you feeling about the Gophers tonight? Nebraska, Minnesota.
It's always a tough game when you got to play somebody.
3-point ball game. We'll see if Danny Burke says it's down to 2.5. But I mean,
should be good. Should be a really good game.
Minnesota's a different squad at home.
Yeah. You know, they're tough at home. They're really good at home. They got some good players and Murphy's just a tough matchup, man.
Yeah.
He's just a double-double machine, and he's just a tough matchup for anybody. So it's like he's probably going to get his points, and it's like can you keep kind of the other guys at bay? And, you know, if they play like they did last week, they should be fine. But it's always tough playing on the road, you know.
Well, the other part of this, too, is you look at what's going on in college. You're now – it's a conference game, not that you want to, but it isn't the end of the world if you drop a conference road game.
Exactly. You know, because everybody's – the conference – just look at the games yesterday. I mean, Northwestern should have beat Michigan.
Yep.
You know, and it's like – it's just a tough –
2-point ball game.
Yeah, it's just a tough conference. So you're going to have some losses in there.
You have 50% that are ranked and two others that are about to be ranked.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive.
So it's a loaded league right now again. It's back and stronger or as strong as it's ever been. So – yeah, I mean, it's a minefield you're going to have to get through. Creighton looms. How are you feeling? Is this the year they get the Blue Jays?
You would think so.
If it's going to happen, if it's ever going to happen, it'll be Saturday.
Yeah, I don't know. This might be the Harbaugh-Urban Meyer scenario.
Between the ears?
Between the ears. It's like Harbaugh wants to beat Urban so bad, and he just
can't.
He's not very happy right now either because he's not going to have a chance to.
No, Urban's 7. What do you think of that? I thought he was actually sincere and normal in his press conference.
He was. Probably.
He was at peace.
He was.
For the first time in his freaking life.
Yeah, he was okay with the decision and completely content. And he does care a lot about Ohio State, and he obviously feels that they're in really good hands. You know?
This is a different feel than like sneaking away from Florida.
Yeah.
This is actually like, I can't coach the way I want to coach.
Exactly.
I've done a 180. I've not been a huge Urban believer with whatever said by him, but I think this is very, very fair, very accurate. We'll get into some golf. Mike Shuhart sitting in. Good to see Shuey here. Hale Varsity continues, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
And now, back to Hale Varsity Radio.
Coming up 10 minutes away, Brad Edwards, college football insider, Jacob Padilla. Going to have a breakdown in Nebraska, Minnesota. Chris Schmidt, Danny Burke, the pride of Chicago. Shuey is in, golf insider, golf expert. Shuey, you've got tour school starting and, of course, Tiger and the Australian Open. Let's start with the Australian Open. What is what's your interest level in that? I mean, it's golf. It's 20 degrees here, whatever it is, and I've always kind of wanted to go to Australia. Have you been? Have you played down there?
No, I haven't. That is one place I'd like to go, though. That's one of the few places I have not been.
Well, let's book it if you'll put up with me for 18.
Yeah, I've heard it's beautiful there. I got a lot of friends that I played golf with that were from Australia, and they're like...
The Aussies have a hell of a good time, don't they?
They do. They know how to have a good time, that is for sure. Never met one that didn't.
You got an Australian golf buddy story you can clean up and share on the air?
Yeah, Stuart Appleby.
Okay, all right. Yeah.
So he came out and we became good friends. And my wife was caddying for me in his his former wife, who died tragically, actually.
Sorry to hear that.
Which was horrible. But anyway, so they were good friends. So we used to play a lot of practice rounds together and everything. And so there's a lot of guys that chew on the golf course.
Yep.
That's just something that, you know. So he's like, you know what? He says, I want to try that.
Mate,
I want to try that. So it's like, I don't think you want to try that.
Don't start it.
Yeah. So he kept at it. So he tried it. So we were walking down the first hole and got to the second tee, and we couldn't find him. We had no clue where he was. And we looked back over there in the corner, and he was in the bushes. And
just Ralph.
Yeah, he was. So
you're telling me you're not supposed to gut it unless you're John Wayne?
Exactly. So it was one and done with that dude on that one. That was pretty funny.
What about Steve Elkington?
Yeah, I was out there a little bit with him. I never got to know him all that well. But
he's a pretty bombastic personality.
Very much so.
Yeah.
So he's a pretty cool guy. I like him because he's very flamboyant, you know. Again, he's a fun guy to be around.
That's awesome. That's a good story about Stuart Appleby. To say no to the long cut.
He deserved it, though, because he made me eat some Vegemite that he thought
was
good.
What is that?
That's the worst stuff ever.
I've heard of it. What?
I couldn't even describe it.
Is it just like some sort of
It's pasty
shake?
Dirt.
Okay.
Pasty dirt.
He made you eat Vegemite.
Yeah. He's like, you love this stuff. It's great.
What'd he put it on? Bread?
Bread.
Okay.
And I'm like, that. It's kind of like Toy Story. What's the one with Tom Hanks where he eats that
Toy
thing?
Story.
Yeah. He starts wiping his tongue off.
That No. That's
it
big.
Big.
Yeah.
Big. That was it.
Yeah. It's the scene from Ace Ventura, second Ace Ventura reference, where he's asking the Marino's asking Ace for some gum.
Yeah. I remember that. That was pretty funny, too.
Pretty good. Should we qualify? Should we do that? All right. Let's qualify for the holiday Hail Mary, caller 8, caller 9 right now with Hail Varsity. Your chance at some goodies coming up the 14th.
Hey! Three-man rush.
What's this, lying around?
All kinds of time.
It's the season to be merry.
Depths into the throw, in the wind.
Nipply out. I mean nippy out.
Down to the goal line!
We're gonna have the happiest Christmas since Bing Crosby tap dance with Danny Kaye.
Todd!
Ho, ho, ho.
Touchdown!
Gotta love that old Sean McDonough, man. Touchdown! Caller 8-9, qualify for the Holiday Hail Mary. 466-377-6800, 825-5865. Shuey, you're awesome, brother. Hang out.
I will.
Don't get Brad Edwards on the horn here. College football coming up next hour.
Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz_radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Back with you, Tower 2. It's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, the pride of Chicago, is Danny Burke. Golf pro Mike Shuhart sitting in. Good to see Shuey. We say hi to Brad Edwards, ESPN.com and Magazine College Football Insider. College Game Day at JBradEdwards on Twitter. Brad, an interesting Sunday. We had just gotten done with morning basketball for my little guy. And we're watching on our phone, and boom, Oklahoma pops up, and then there's Georgia, and then there's Ohio State. Brad, where are you at with what the committee did? Do you agree with it? Do you have a tweak? What do you think?
Well, I was fine with what they did. I mean, I do take exception to them calling it the four best teams, because to me, there's Alabama and Clemson, and then there's a little bit of a gap, and there's Georgia, and then there's more of a gap, and then there's say Ohio State, Oklahoma, Notre Dame, and then I'd throw Michigan in that group too. So I don't know how they call it the four best, which they like to do, but I think I'm fine, as most people are, with calling it something else, four most deserving or whatever you want it to be, and apply the conference championships and all that when one team hasn't separated itself significantly from the others. And you know, that's what we got. And certainly they avoided controversy by doing it. I cannot imagine what we'd be talking about now if a two-loss non-champion from the SEC had gotten in over one-loss champs from the Big 12 and the Big 10. But they did still put a two-loss non-champ from the SEC over the one-loss Big Ten champion. And that was confusing to me. You know, if they're going to say that their protocol requires them to do things a certain way, I see a lot of inconsistency in using the conference championship to put Oklahoma over Georgia, but that same conference championship doesn't trump Georgia for Ohio State. I don't get how that works, but I think most people in the country are okay with the four teams they came up with.
What's your takeaway 24 hours later from Urban Meyer? I thought his press conference was, well, it was good. He seemed at peace. He seemed relieved. He seemed happy. And it's a far cry from how this season's been. But what's your thoughts on Urban Meyer when you think of him and Ohio State? And with Ohio State, can they keep being Ohio State without Urban Meyer?
Well, I think if you look at their history, I mean, they have been Ohio State for a really long time. And you know, it takes an incredible set of circumstances to conspire for them to ever win fewer than eight games in a season. So it's a place that it's kind of hard to screw it up. So I don't think I don't think Ryan Day is going to, you know, be in jeopardy of you know, driving Ohio State football into the dumpster. But there's a very fine line between where they are right now and, say, where Michigan is right now. Mm-hmm. And that fine line is as small as just winning that game when they play each other. I mean, you think about, you know, what that's done in recent years as far as Ohio State becoming the Big Ten champion and in some cases getting into the playoff, whereas Michigan is playing in a good bowl most of the time, but it's a different tier from where Ohio State is. And so, I have a hard time thinking that there won't be any drop-off. Now, I did say the same thing when Bob Stoops stepped down and Lincoln Riley took over. You know, my comment was you can't lose a Hall of Fame coach and replace him with someone who's never been a head coach before and expect that there won't be a drop-off. Well, with Oklahoma, there really hasn't. But with Ohio State, like I said, even a slight drop-off in that division could be a big thing. And so, look, I think Urban Meyer, like, things worked out well for him. I think because of his health issues, he really had no choice but to step down after the season. I think it would have been really foolish to try to go through another year, given the way everything was looking for him on the sideline this year. And considering how close it was to really going the wrong direction, if Maryland converts a two-point, you know, play right there in overtime, I mean, think about what the impression would have been of Ohio State's season and the way people would have felt about him when exiting if that play had worked. Instead, he survives that game. He beats Michigan, wins the Big Ten, and now he's got a chance to go out on the shoulders of his players at the Rose Bowl. That would be, I mean, look, that's as good of a finish as you could have for Urban Meyer, especially when you consider how bad things were at the start of this season.
Well, and I mean, Nebraska's a play away from going up two touchdowns. I mean, you're right. They had so many close calls this year. And it's funny how the narrative's different when it comes to health and how you exit a program. The way he left Florida, they were 7-5 in a mess, and he had off-the-field issues galore. This year, they beat Michigan. They're poised to go 13-1, right? And I don't want to say it's believable, but it feels sincere when it comes to health, just because they haven't been the same team with Urban Meyer this year compared to past years. I think it is something that you really can't question this time about his health, when that's what's been the question mark about his longevity.
Yeah, I think when he left Florida because of, you know, quote, health reasons, there were a lot of people who kind of questioned that, or at the very least they were cynical about it, because there was no doubt that the product had dropped off on the field, and people thought, like, it was just a convenient time for him to escape. You know, whereas here, I mean, certainly the program is in really good shape, as you mentioned, much better shape than the way he left Florida. But also, when you see him on the sideline, and the vision that I'll always have is the one at Maryland. You know, when they're down at the end of regulation, need a touchdown to tie it up, send it in overtime, timeout, the offense is huddled up, assistant coaches over there talking to the team, and Meyer's off to the side looking down at the ground. You can only assume, because he's in a great deal of pain, But at that point, there's no question something was wrong. And we had heard reports that had been told to us, you know, before he had this cyst on the brain. And you could choose to believe it or not, but there was no denying at that stage. Like, that would have been a very poor time to try to seek sympathy by faking, you know, some sort of injury or illness. I think he absolutely needs to step away and at the very least take a break. Whether we'll see him again as another story, I think it really depends on whether this is something that can be treated and taken care of, or whether it's something that's going to always be there and gets inflamed by stress. Because if you have a major issue that's going to get aggravated by stress, coaching at this level of college football is not the job to have.
You can't do it. Brett Edwards with us, a few minutes, Hale Varsity Radio, ESPN College Day, Game Day, ESPN Insider, at J. Brad Edwards on Twitter. Is this a good time for Harbaugh to walk away? Does he entertain some NFL overtures? Green Bay's there, Cleveland's open, or do you think he has more work to do? I mean, he obviously has more work to do, but do you think he wants to put that work in Ann Arbor?
Yeah, I mean, that's up to him as to, you know, where he thinks he needs to be long-term. I mean, you know, last few places Jim Harbaugh's been, after about this amount of time, you were already hearing a lot of stories about him not getting along with the other people he worked with and those kinds of things. And I'm not hearing that out of Michigan. I mean, certainly there's some frustration by fans who wanted to see a better result in Columbus a couple weeks ago. But I think if anything, the Urban Meyer retirement, if that's what we're calling it, should encourage Harbaugh because, look, this is not completely like when Bob Stoops stepped down last year and named Lincoln Riley, and that was really late in the game. That was, what, spring, early summer,
June, you know,
somewhere in that range. And it was too late at that point for any assistant coaches to leave. Obviously, they've already been through spring practice, and you know, players weren't going to leave. It wasn't going to affect recruiting in the short term. So this is different in that it's possible that some of these, you know, veteran guys like Greg Schiano, Kevin Wilson, might not have any interest in working under a 39-year-old. And maybe they take off. It could be other assistants that, for whatever reason, would rather work somewhere else. It is also possible that it could affect recruiting. There might be some guys who really wanted to play for Urban. So I think for all those reasons, you can't just assume there's not going to be a drop-off. And this opens the door for Michigan. Obviously, they've got the game in Ann Arbor next year. And so if there was ever an opportunity to win that division and finally get to the playoff, you would think that Jim Harbaugh would be motivated to stick around.
Brad, based off both quarterbacks' performances this past weekend being Kyler Murray and Tua, are you confident in saying that Kyler is your clear favorite at this point? Because the odds makers have him as the favorite now.
For the Heisman?
Yeah, I think he should be the favorite. Now, whether that means he'll win is a completely different story because there are over 900 people who vote for the Heisman. And if there are that many voters, I think it's kind of logical that they don't all follow college football nationally at a really close level. And so they might not be basing their votes on the same thing that I know I based mine on. So there are a lot of different reasons someone could still vote for Tua, even though I think Kyler Murray did enough to overtake him at the end of the season. And first of all, we heard that there were like 10% of the votes were cast before championship weekend, which you would think that would be very much in Tua's favor. I think there are people who might just vote for him by default because he's the quarterback of the number one team and he has a zero in the loss column, whereas Kyler Murray's team has lost a game. Seems kind of silly, but to some people that might be all it takes. I think there are other people who will not vote Kyler number one because Baker Mayfield won it last year. And they feel like it kind of looks like a system thing at Oklahoma where it's the system that creates the quarterback as opposed to the other way around, which I think is untrue, but certainly people could have that opinion. And then there may even be a few who would hold it against Kyler Murray that he's going to play baseball and might rather vote for someone who they think will be in the NFL one day as opposed to playing in the majors. So those are all things I can point to that would suggest that Tua would still have a chance. But to me, there's no question that Kyler Murray should be the favorite based on what happened this week. To me, the bottom line is that Kyler played so well every week of the season that he never allowed Tua, even with the numbers Tua was putting up, he never allowed him to build so much of a cushion that he could afford, or that he had a mulligan, you know? Like, that was the big thing, is that the pressure was always on where Tua could not have a bad game and survive, at least in my opinion. I think it was close enough that he couldn't survive a bad game, and obviously last Saturday he had a bad game.
Brad Edwards with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Brad, what's Maryland getting in Bama OC Locksley?
Well, first and foremost, they're getting a guy who knows that area very well and has great relationships with the high school coaches. He's a great recruiter regardless, but he's especially elite when it comes to that whole, you know, that Maryland, Virginia area, which includes, you know, obviously D.C. So that's where you're getting, is a guy who should be able to bring in a good bit of talent. I think D.J. Durkin had already done a good job of upgrading their talent. I think you saw that this year with them beating Texas second year in a row with nearly knocking off Ohio State. Mm-hmm. They've got players at Maryland, not as many as other teams in that division, but they've got some. And I think you'll continue that with Locksley. He doesn't have a great track record as a head coach. Obviously, his winning percentage is horrendous. But I'm sure, like a lot of people, he's learned some things over the years and learned some things from Nick Saban. Probably help him be a better coach. I just still think that, I mean, in that division, what's your ceiling? You know, I mean, finishing third, is that the best you can kind of hope for? It seems like it's a long shot for Maryland to ever become a player nationally. Especially, I mean, think about it. A few years ago, if you'd taken that job while Michigan and Penn State were both down,
you're good.
Maybe you'd have more hope. But right now, all three of those teams are up. I'm not even counting Michigan State. It just seems like just such a long shot.
Last thought here, Brad, and would love to get your take on Kentucky. And I asked this question because Nebraska just was recently able to get their number one player in state, kind of a Rondale Moore type athlete. He was a Kentucky commit. He flipped to Nebraska. What's the ceiling for Kentucky football? 9-3, great season, but long term, what's the best they can do in the SEC landscape?
Yeah, I don't know if this was part of his thought process, but I would say the same thing about Kentucky that I've said about Maryland.
Gotcha.
You know, you're in the SEC East with, and look, while that might sound better than being in the SEC West, Georgia is very clearly one of the elite teams in the country right now. I think Florida is clearly on the way up with Dan Mullen. And those are two teams that if you're Kentucky, you should never be on their level talent-wise. And that's just those two. You know, I think there are on top of that, advantages that both Tennessee and South Carolina have over Kentucky. Now, whether they have the right coach to take advantage of it in a given year is another story. But yeah, I think that's one of those where, you know, Kentucky, probably their best case is third in the division. And look, it took Mark Stoops to get to a point where he had a very veteran team this year. I mean, like almost all seniors and juniors in the starting lineup to be able to make the run they did. And, you know, they still got blown out by Georgia on their home field. They ended up losing a lopsided game to Tennessee after that. And there's just no margin for error there. And so I think if I had a choice, I'd go to Nebraska right now, because I think the possibility of playing in a conference championship game is so much bigger in Lincoln than it is in Lexington.
Brad, you have a great rest of your week, and we'll get caught up down the road here to talk some more college football. Appreciate your time as always, sir.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Take care. You too. Brad Edwards, good stuff there on the, you know, what's the ceiling look like for Kentucky? What's the ceiling look like tonight in the barn? Williams Arena, Gophers, Nebraska basketball, tip-off at 8 on BTN. Jacob Adilla going to tell us what he thinks of Nebraska in this matchup on the road. Jacob also going to chime in on Wandale Robinson, saying he is in. So that's coming up. Danny Burke, Chris Schmidt, Mike Shuhart. Hail Varsity continues, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back in to Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Let's get caught up with Jacob Padilla at Jacob Padilla _ where you follow him on Twitter, Husker Basketball Insider with HailVarsity.com and Magazine. Jacob, how are you, man?
I'm doing well, Chris. Thanks for having me.
Appreciate it. You know, big game for Nebraska at Minnesota tonight. We'll get your kind of rundown and preview on road game number one for Nebraska in the Big Ten. But Wandale Robinson, we started the show off talking about him, got caught up with Greg. I want your thoughts. You see a lot of high school athletes in the Metro and in Lincoln, and obviously Robinson's out of Kentucky. But, man, what a special athlete. What are your impressions of him as you see him fitting in to the Nebraska offense, the get for Nebraska and Ryan Held?
Yeah, I just remember a couple of weeks back before he had committed, Greg Smith and I were in the office and just kind of looking up his numbers and what he was doing this season as a senior in high school, and they were just ridiculous. It's awesome for Nebraska. Losing a guy like Stanley Morgan Jr. and Devine Azigbo as well, that's a lot of firepower that the Huskers have to replace next year. And Robinson looks like a kind of guy that can come in and make an impact right away. Some of the guys they brought in last year weren't quite ready to make the impact we thought they could potentially make. So if Robinson's able to kind of get going right off the bat, then that's just huge for the offense, because then you've got J.D. Spielman, you've got him, hopefully somebody else will emerge, kind of spread the field a little bit. So the more playmakers they can put out on the field at the same time, the better this offense is going to go and the harder it's going to be to defend. And that's clearly what they need, especially as they're continuing to kind of rebuild this defense and get their pieces in and get everybody comfortable in the system. So this is a huge win for the staff, and it's a credit to them for sticking with it and reading the situation. I think important thing is how well they read the situation, knowing, hey, we've got a legitimate shot here. This kid really does want to be here, so let's kind of stay in his ear and let him know, hey, you need to do what you want to do. Do what's best for you. And it sounds like that's what he ended up doing.
Well, in his message on Twitter, he mentioned outside influences. And I'm trying to put myself in the kid's shoes. Well, A, being recruited, right? But but B, just the pressure from the whole state and people close to him. That's not a, it's not a popular call, but it feels like the right call for him, it sounds like.
Yeah, there's no doubt. Like, I can't even imagine what, like, you saw. I don't know if you saw, but his coach put out a message as well and mentioned how, like, he's one of the greatest players Kentucky's ever seen. And it's coming off of kind of a, one of their, Kentucky's better seasons, in a while, it's like you can understand that pressure. Hey, to be the hometown hero, stay home in front of all your friends and family and be the guy that kind of continues this upward swing for Kentucky football. But at the end of the day, it just didn't feel right to him for whatever reason. Like, everything that Nebraska sold to him just clicked with him. And I think in the end, that's what won out.
Jacob Padilla is with us, HailVarsity.com and magazine at @JacobPadilla_. We're talking Wandale Robinson's flip to Nebraska. When you watch him, and we'll get to hoops in a second, but do you see his elusiveness translating from high school to college in that big of wow factor, that big play gash ability? That's why he's being recruited, but watching his highlight film, I mean, nobody touched the guy. I didn't see a touchdown under, like, 40 yards.
Yeah, no, he definitely had some big plays. And that'll be interesting to see kind of to what degree what he did in high school translates. That's always the toughest part of the evaluation process, is judging what he's going against, the system he's playing in, kind of how all that thing will translate. And he's not going to be putting up the video game numbers quite like he did in high school, but I definitely think the kid just has such a great feel for running with the ball in his hands, whether it's out of the backfield as a receiver or just straight up taking the handoff and running with it. He's got such a good ability to read the field and get where he needs to go, change directions, all that kind of stuff. So I'd be surprised if we didn't see some big plays out of him in year one.
Jacob Padilla is with us. Let's talk Nebraska basketball. Great opportunity for the Big Red to keep this momentum going. They're at Minnesota. Gophers are 6-2. They've lost two out of their last three. Ohio State's a tough place to go win at. They got drilled there. The ACC Big Ten Challenge, they got beat by BC. and they've got a lot of firepower back. What are some keys tonight for Nebraska as they are on the road again?
Yeah, the number one key, and when I asked him about it, Tim Miles said it was one or two on the scouting report, was staying out of foul trouble, because Minnesota, they are not very good offensively at all, but if there's one thing they do well, it's get to the free throw line. And that goes, that's especially true for their two stars, Jordan Murphy and Amir Coffey. Those guys take over 14 free throw attempts combined per game. So that's going to be number one key with Isaiah Roby, his tendency to get some stupid fouls and get himself into foul trouble. Maybe Glenn Watson reaches in here, there on a drive or something like that. They need to keep those guys on the court as much as possible. So Nebraska's got to be really smart. They got to be on point with their rotations, get in position, maybe take a couple charges, maybe get some bodies there early to kind of dissuade Minnesota from crashing in there. And then they have to box out as well, because Jordan Murphy is a monster on the offensive glass, and that's the other thing they do well. So if Nebraska can play smart, play without fouling, and really take care of the defensive glass, I think they'll have a great shot to keep Minnesota in check, because offensively they don't do a lot well. I mean, you look at that Ohio State game that they're coming off, 20-point loss. They went 0 for 13 from 3. And that, I don't often see a college basketball game where a team fails to make even one three-pointer. They basically have one shooter, and it's freshman guard Gabe Kalscher, who's shooting over 50% from 3. But he only got one attempt off and was in foul trouble against the Buckeyes. So I think you keep a body on him. Don't let him get open. I don't think there's anybody else on that team that scares you from the perimeter. So if Nebraska plays smart and plays disciplined, they'll have a chance to kind of pull away from Minnesota in this one, I think.
Is the physicality matchup pretty even for both? Or is Minnesota, I mean, they're bruisers. I mean, how do they kind of compare to Texas Tech, I guess, is the best question.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think Jordan Murphy is a different kind of big than anybody that Texas Tech had. He's 6'6", about 250. So he's undersized but doesn't play like it. Like I said, Ohio State actually held him to 7 points and 7 rebounds, and he had 4 fouls. So I think that was a huge key in that game, because he's the kind of guy that you can basically mark down as a double-double before the game even starts. And so he's a guy that's really physical around the rim, really does a great job of carving out space and finding a way to get up shots and draw fouls, even despite being undersized from a height perspective. And then Coffey is a 6'8 wing, kind of runs a little bit of point for them, runs on the wing. He's a slasher. He's not a great shooter, but he's a good athlete, long, really gets to the rim. So you're going to have to be able to stay in front of him and, like I said, kind of wall up and not give him space to get through, get slide pass, and kind of get to the rim. So that's kind of they're a little bit different, but I guess Coffey you could compare a little bit to Jarrett Culver, Texas Tech's star kind of combo guard slash wing that gave Nebraska so many problems.
Jacob Padilla previewing Nebraska Minnesota with us, HaleVarsity.com and magazine at Jacob Padilla _ where you follow him on Twitter. Good preview for the Nebraska Minnesota game up on HaleVarsity.com by Jacob. So who can get off for Nebraska offensively? From a defensive standpoint, what is Minnesota great at? You mentioned their work on the glass, but is there anybody that can be a threat to making James have a tough night or get in there on Copeland, the two guys? What can Glenn do tonight? Kind of give me that outlook.
Yeah, I mean, they're decent at limiting opponents' three-point attempts. Outside of that, they're pretty average defensively, giving up about 70 a game. So I don't think somebody like Texas Tech or somebody that can really lock you down and take things away. So I think what Nebraska's going to be able to do is I think they're going to be able to get to the rim. Their center is a true freshman, Daniel Turu, kind of 6'8", four-star high school recruit, can block shots a little bit, but they don't have great rim protection from the four spot. Murphy's not a great shot blocker. Like I said, he's undersized. So I think this is definitely a Palmer game where he can get into the paint, draw a couple fouls on their guys, get to the rim and finish without having to worry too much about getting rejected or getting cut off to the rim. So Ohio State also got loose from three, 7-17. So not a huge amount of attempts, but they shot it pretty well. So if a guy like Thomas Allen or Glenn Watson Jr. can get some open looks, I think those opportunities will be there. They just have to capitalize on.
Do you think James is being a little more conscious, or is there a pitch count with three attempts? I mean, he was 4-12 the other night, but, man, he got to the line, and he's been more efficient with his three-point shot. Is that something that's just kind of come naturally, or is that something that someone had a chat with him about?
Well, and I actually asked to Miles about that yesterday after practice, like, because he had been 8, 7, 8, 9 attempts for a few games in a row. In the last three, he's been at 5 or 6 each of the three. He was an 0-for-5 in the first one, but the last two he shot well, to a 5, 3 of 6 over the last two games. So I asked him if that's kind of more the balance that he wants to see from Palmer, but he kind of didn't really – he kind of just said, like, hey, I only care whether it's a good shot or not. He doesn't really care about the number of attempts, just as long as they're the right ones. Mm. And I get what he's saying, but I also think, like, with a guy like Palmer and the way he's shooting for the season and dating back to last year, even if they're good looks, if they're not falling, then they're not good looks anymore. Like, you have to, at a certain point, the results have to start weighing into the process. And I definitely think Palmer's a guy that, again, 4 or 5, I think that's kind of the sweet spot of where you want him taking threes. Because even with the more attempts, it hasn't proven to give you more results. Again, 2 of 9, 2 of 8, a couple of games in a row. Like, about, he went 16 straight games without making more than 2 threes, no matter how many he attempted. So he just finally broke that with his last one. So Miles isn't talking about it, but I definitely think it's something that should probably happen. And maybe Palmer's kind of focusing on it himself.
Give me a prediction.
I think Nebraska will win maybe like 73-62 or something like that.
All right. Good stuff, man. Thanks for the update today.
Yep. Sounds good, Chris.
And now,
back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back in Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Time for a Jock Doc Wednesday, Lincoln Orthopedic Center. Dr. Brandon Seifert with us. Dr. Brandon, how are you?
I'm great, Chris. How are you doing?
Doing okay. I don't know many folks, as you get close to playoff time in fantasy football, running Colt McCoy out there as a starter, and the Redskins now on Mark Sanchez. Colt McCoy, the second Redskin to break his leg. Let's discuss the injury here on our Jock Doc today. What's in front of Colt here, and what do you know about his fracture?
Yeah, you know, so what they've released out there is they're calling it a fibula fracture. And so just thinking about these anatomically, if you think about in your ankle joint, there's two bones that mainly make up the ankle, at least the top side of the ankle. The shin bone is the tibia, and then the small bone next to that, which would be the outside kind of ball portion of your ankle, that's called the fibula, and that'd be the bone that he broke. They're not saying specifically where it's at along the fibula. I'm assuming it's towards the bottom. That's typically where we see the majority of these injuries. But fracture break, basically the same thing. Us. That's what it sounds like that it is. You know, a tough injury, definitely one it sounds like he needs to have surgery for. Recovery-wise, you know, they're going to do pretty well, but it's kind of a long road getting yourself back to that level of play.
Dr. Brandon Seifert with us on Hail Varsity Radio at Jock Doc Wednesday, Lincoln Orthopedic Center. So when it comes to that lower leg and the fracture there, I always just wonder about the stress that you have with ankle and with the foot and the push off you need for throwing the football. Is this something that even with the repair, with the surgery, long term, it can affect maybe how much torque he can get lower body?
Yeah, it sure can. Some of the pivoting torque, some of just the ankle range of motion things that you need to do to be fast, have good to have, you know, pretty well pretty good agility. All those kind of things are impacted with these. But not to a huge extent, especially, you know, from the quarterback perspective and the type of quarterback that he is. Hopefully won't have a whole lot of kind of long-term limitations as it relates to that in terms of the mobility.
When it comes to the procedure, take me through it. How do you guys go about fixing the athlete?
sure. You know, so in this case, a lot of different things to think about. So, again, the releasing fibula fracture, the small bone on the outside of the ankle, that can mean a lot of things. It depends kind of where along the fibula fracture is located. If it's something that needs surgery, typically these are things that we fix with a plate and some screws. It'd be a plate that kind of fits off the side of the bone. And then you know, there's a variety of those that are out there, and a variety of different techniques for doing that. And then in addition to that, that's kind of the next question is, did he do something else to the ankle? We've talked about this before, about some of this high ankle sprain stuff, where basically there's a thick ligament that's in between the tibia and the fibula. And that's basically called the syndesmosis. Real thick ligament runs up in between the two bones, holds it together, holds the ankle joint together in terms of that stability between those two bones. Not uncommon at a high-level injury like he had to actually tear part of that in addition to the fracture of the fibula. And so when we talk about surgical technique, first, you know, fixing the fibula, and then the second thing they would do is they would test the stability of that ligament, and if there is some instability in that syndesmosis ligament, performing fixation for that. Majority of folks that have that fixed, there's a new kind of fancy construct we're using where it's kind of a, we call it a tightrope or a rope construct, where you put these two little metal buttons, one dunked on the other side of the tibia, one on the fibula, and it basically you kind of seesaw it back and forth to dial in the tension you want, and that functions as kind of an artificial ligament in between the two bones for a while, and eventually your old ligament kind of scars back in. So those are some of the techniques you can do, at least from that perspective. Long term, the things you worry about with this is a high level injury like this, you also could knock off some cartilage or injure some cartilage in the actual ankle joint, and so sometimes they'll couple in a ankle scope along with this, put a scope or a camera inside the ankle joint, make sure there's no kind of loose fragments of bone or cartilage in there, and clean that out. And obviously, if there was a big, you know, injury to the cartilage, they may have to do something to try to restore the cartilage in that area. And those would be kind of some of the surgical things that they would be considering for sure.
Talking Colt McCoy's injury at Jock Doc Wednesday, Lincoln Orthopedic Center, Dr. Brandon Seifert. When it comes to his recovery, okay, what's the timeline for McCoy, and what are some of the options from a physical therapy standpoint? What's he going to do once he's out of surgery? What's the timeline before he can get back to being Colt McCoy?
You know, the big push here is, what do you do with the weight-bearing status afterwards? Is it a fracture that's stable enough with fixation that we can allow him to put weight on it right away? Or is this a fracture maybe he has to wait a couple of weeks before he puts weight on it? That'll be the first kind of thing they have to think about. And then also thinking about some of that stability of the fixation, can you start him into a range of motion program right away? Typically we do that. And so one, be stretching the ankle, getting some mobility back, doing some kind of soft tissue work in the area to loosen up some of the scar tissue prevention. And then ultimately, once you kind of start into some of that more weight-bearing activity, then you can start talking about some aerobic type of activities. Once his incisions heal up well, typically around that 3 to 4 week mark, he'll get in and start doing some pool work. Pool work is actually great for rehabbing post-operative ankle fractures and those kind of things. So he'll definitely do a lot of that within a progression onto the elliptical and jogging activities, probably between week 6 to 10. But it's you know, probably a good, before he's doing some drop back passing, those kind of things, it's probably a good 8 to 12 weeks if it's just fibula. If you tack on having to fix that ligament, that probably adds another 4 to 6 weeks or more in terms of kind of a delay of getting back into, you know, jumping activities, running and cutting, those type of things.
Dr. Brandon, at what point did an injury like this go from career ending to no big deal, we'll fix you up and you'll be back out there?
Yeah, a lot of it has been just the evolution of, you know, technology, you know, things you can use to fix these. Also, our understanding of how much can you push these, you know, post-operatively. In the past, even though maybe the technology may have been there at one point, we probably weren't very certain as to, can I put weight on this? Can I rehab this right away? Do I have to put them in a cast for 8 weeks? 10 weeks, what have you. We didn't really understand all of that when all this even kind of newer technology came out. And so once we kind of made that leap from, okay, now we have this technology to fix the bony problem, how do we take it and deal with it post-operatively in terms of rehab? And so once those two kind of came together, we figured out how to do the rehab program kind of just on the cusp of being aggressive enough, but not too much that you're causing an impairment to the healing. That's when you started to see folks get back in and do, you know, compete back at a high level of athletics. And, you know, once they figured that out, it was pretty quick that those folks started making it back after these injuries, especially with, you know, more of a quarterback position.
Dr. Brandon, is this a unique injury to football, or do you see this? I mean, can you see it in basketball? Can you see it in track and field, hockey? I mean, where else is it common?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the high-level contact sports, we probably see it the most. You know, football, a pretty common area to see it, hockey for sure, and basketball definitely. So you think about all the rolled ankles in basketball that, you know, can lead to this. Not as common, obviously, in track or even cross-country for that matter. But we do see it a decent amount in football. Still not, high numbers of these injuries are not occurring, you know, necessarily in those sports. We see more kind of the ligament injuries, whether it be ankle sprains or the ligament knee injuries or the ligament shoulder type injuries. We see those a lot more than, you know, the fractured fibulas or even, you know, terrible case with a quarterback, you know, the previous week with the fractured tibia.
Dr. Brandon Seifert with us, Lincoln Orthopedic Center, a Jock Doc Wednesday. And we're talking Colt McCoy and his injury. And that's two quarterbacks that are down for the Washington Redskins. And it is Mark Sanchez time. Do that with what you will. Dr. Brandon, it was great to get caught up with you. Thanks for a few minutes today.
All right, Chris. You guys take care.
Miss us?
Come here, brother. Give me a hug. Bring it in for the real thing.
We're on call for you. Catch the podcast at HailVarsity.com, the ESPN Lincoln app, or download them on iTunes.
Saddle up, partner.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
All right, welcome back, everybody, to Hail Varsity Radio. Danny Burke here taking over for Schmidt. He had to step out, take care of some business. So we'll close out today's Wednesday show before Nebraska takes on Minnesota. We got a few sound bites here we'll run through really quick. Tim Miles, we didn't get to it today because, of course, the commitment with Wandale Robinson kind of took over the show. Some big news for Husker football. Now we switch over to Nebraska ball. So let's hear exactly what Coach Tim Miles' thoughts are on the Gophers as they head into Minnesota tonight.
Yeah, you know, when you look at those, they've got a couple of young kids, too, that have cracked the lineup. And I'm impressed with them. I think they're a better home team than they are on the road. They've not performed well, and that's not uncommon. It's hard to win on the road. But as you look at this, this is an important game for us. Minnesota's going to be aggressive. They're coming off two out of three losses, I think, and they haven't played at home for a long time. So our guys will have to be ready to meet that challenge.
And like Miles pointed out, they haven't played at home in a while, and he talks about it here, the difficulty of playing in the barn.
When the Gophers are playing well, it's very difficult because it carries so much noise and it's a unique environment. It's truly built like a barn, you know, hence its nickname, the raised floor. And thank goodness it's about a foot and a half lower than it used to be. I used to be scared up there. I get like vertigo. But at the same time, when you look at this, I think that, our guys today, we blasted music all day to make them communicate and talk to each other in a difficult environment. I think they'll be ready for the challenge.
And you mentioned Minnesota. They've lost their last two out of the three. Their last game against Ohio State, they lost 79-59. Big margin right there on the road. They beat Oklahoma State, though, 83-76, then lost at Boston College 68-56. So they've had quite a difficult schedule. Should not be a problem for Nebraska in my eyes, I believe. And, you know, we've talked about it a lot, Schmitty and I, that core four getting together, it's necessary, especially on the road here in conference playing. And then one of the guys who hasn't been able to do it really is Roby. While he's provided some valuable minutes, hasn't been racking up the points though, but Miles provides some commentary here on how he'll match up against Minnesota's bigs tonight.
Isaiah, you know, if he would, the ones we want to eliminate are those like the kind of just the reach and the stuff. You know, it's bad enough he gets, you know, a phantom foul sometimes. It's bad enough that he's, you know, mismatched sometimes. It's good on offense, bad on defense, but we need him to stay in the game.
And then just another player here. Tim Miles goes off on James Palmer here in his shot selection. What he'll expect from him tonight?
You know, like as much as I love analytics and numbers, I just kind of say that's a bad shot, that's a good shot. And I think that we know that if we're in a half court set, you pass it once or twice and jack a three, that's a bad shot. Other than that, you know, if it's not a total deep three or whatever, I'm okay.
And that's also another thing we've been harping on all year, that shot selection. I've been harping on Nebraska specifically for getting too complacent, especially down the stretch when they have a big lead. They can't settle for those shots, and that's going to be extremely essential tonight if they build that lead on the road. So the spread right now is at 3.5 in favor of Nebraska, over under at 145.5. I've been on board with Nebraska hitting the under since last season. They've been really big with it. This year, they haven't been doing it as much, but on the road, I like Nebraska to hit that under, and I also like them to cover. They covered on Sunday against Illinois. It's like the first time I predicted it right, finally, so I'm going to ride with Nebraska covering once again. I'm going to take the big red. Let's see, 74-68 taking down the Gophers tonight, so should be a good game. Can't wait to watch it. Thanks for tuning in to Hail Varsity today. We'll be back tomorrow, 4-6. Schmitty will be back here rocking and rolling. Thanks for tuning in, guys. Talk to you tomorrow.